All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio, coming to you from the studios of WAAM 1600 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. What a beautiful day outside. Finally, the sun is shining. Everybody feels so much better when the sun is shining. We've got a great program for you today, and I'm really excited to get into it. We're going to be talking with an organization or a founder of an organization called Square Deal for Vets. And this is Sarah and Mike Ferrato. Michael was in the 82nd Airborne as an infantryman, lost his leg and part of his arm after stepping on an IED in Afghanistan. And they've set up their new organization to help veterans work their way through the VA system. And the second part of the program is kind of a little bit off track for us, but I think it's really an important topic. And we're going to be talking about near-death experiences. And I know that some of you out there have had near-death experiences. I didn't, luckily, but our guest is Diane Cochran, and she's going to be talking to us. She's an expert on this. She's retired Army, and I think it's kind of a fascinating story because of these, you know, there are so many men and women in the service today that are, when they get wounded, they don't die, which is great, but they have other issues that continue on through the remainder of their lives. And some of them, while they are wounded, kind of almost go to the other side and then they come back again. And this is what Diane is going to be talking about in the second half of the program. And I find this really interesting, and so I'm anxious for that. You know, you can listen to Veterans Radio on WAAM. You can, some of you, I'm sure, are listening on the internet right now. And you can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And we're putting a lot of our programs now up on podcast on Podbros, and you can get to them from our website. That's veteransradio.net. Just click on podcasts. And I'm always trying to encourage people to send us story ideas. And I got one this week, and unfortunately I didn't get it until just this morning. But I do want to wish a happy birthday. This is to a local Navy veteran. His name is Virgil Thill, and he is 90 years old today. And we can thank Darlene Sinkner for sending us this. And he has just recently written a book about his experience called Shipmates, the Men of the LCS 52 during World War II. And so I'm excited to talk to Virgil at some point in the near future and maybe get him on the program. So keep those cards and letters coming in, folks. We really love to get the real life stories of local veterans, as well as the, I know, some of the authors that we have on our program. And I know that many of you like the idea that we talk about a lot of these different books and authors, and you know, you're not aware of them. I also wanted to thank people for your reaction to the Ashley's War that was on last week's program. This was a book about women who had served in Afghanistan with special operation teams going into the villages where they could interview the women that live in the villages, since they're not going to talk to the American men soldiers. And these are very brave women, and they deserve a lot of credit. So anyways, so happy birthday to Virgil Thill, and we wish you all the best. It looks like your whole family is going to be up there in Northville, and I think that's really exciting. The other thing we wanted to do, we wanted to acknowledge the new VA Secretary, David Shulkin, and we wish him the best. He's signed on for a very difficult job. And I want everybody to know that here on Veterans Radio, you know, we have tried for 13 years to be as apolitical as possible. We just want our congressmen and our service, you know, and our senators and our presidents and so forth to just live up to their promises. You know, if you tell us that you're going to do something, do it. Don't give us a little song and dance and, you know, and then 8 years later, you're not able to get it done. So, President Trump has got a lot on his table, and we wish him the best. And, you know, he is our president, and so we've got to support him as long as we can. And I'm hoping that he comes through with some of these things and can concentrate on what needs to be done. So anyway, we congratulate David Shulkin as the new VA secretary. I hope he can streamline it. Hope he can fix a lot of things. I know he doesn't want to rebuild it from the ground up, and I don't think it needs to be rebuilt from the ground up either. But there certainly could be a lot of ways of fixing it. So good luck. Hey, listen, you know, we're going to be doing a program in the next couple of weeks about the VA. And so we're looking again for people out there who may have some good stories and may have some bad stories. So if you'd like to get involved in that program, you can go to our website, veteransradio.net, click up in the right-hand corner, it says Contact Us, and we will do that. And, of course, you can always put your stories up on Facebook, or you can just send me a direct email to dale@veteransradio.net. All right, we're going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to be talking with the organizers of a new organization called Square Deal for Vets. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back on Veterans Radio with our first guest of today's program. And there's a nice quote on their website, and it says, "A man who is good enough to shed his blood for his country is good enough to be given a square deal afterwards." And that comes from President Theodore Roosevelt. And so we have a new organization out there, folks, and it's called Square Deal for Veterans. And I've got one of the founders on the line with me right now, and it is Sarah Verardo. And I don't want to make Sarah, I don't mess up your name, Sarah, but welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I'm still humming along to the Army song that I just heard on commercial. I liked that. Thanks for having us.
No, it's my pleasure. You know, we try to match our music to our guests.
Great.
And so I don't know what the 82nd Airborne's theme song is, but...
Oh, it's not fit for public consumption, that's for sure.
Like most of them, right?
Right, exactly.
That is... That's good, Sarah. I like that one. All right. So tell me, in 20 minutes or less, tell me everything that we need to know about your new organization, Square Deal for Vets. I suppose you should probably start with what happened to Mike.
Sure. So Mike and I were in high school during the events of September 11th, and he knew he wanted to go in and bring the fight to the enemy. And so he did, and he wanted to be with the best of the best. So he enlisted, he went to basic training, Fort Benning, and ultimately ended up with the 82nd Airborne. And in August of 2009, they deployed to southern Afghanistan to conduct combat operations. And fairly immediately, they were met with an enemy that was largely invisible, mm-hmm. which were the improvised explosive devices. They suffered very, very high casualty rates. 37 of the men that he served with never came home, and many were severely wounded. And so in April of 2010, he was on in a truck on patrol, and they hit a roadside IED. He was ejected out. He took, you know, banged up. He was medevaced out, but he requested to be returned to duty with his unit, and he was. And on his very first patrol back in action, he was on a foot patrol. And he went over a wall with 8 other guys. He was the last one over. And an IED, it was an old Russian landmine that they had hooked up to 2 5-gallon jugs of homemade high explosives.
Oh, man.
And it immediately ripped off his left leg, much of his left arm, caused really severe facial trauma, and he's burned over about 35% of his body. He was, you know, they called in for a medevac. Thanks to the men in his unit, they were able to save him, although it was very touch and go for a while. He was expected to be dead on arrival, and of course the first hurdle that he cleared was that he was not. So right. He was in a coma for about 8 days, woke up at Walter Reed, and it began the really long road home from war, which he's still on. He just had another surgery a couple of weeks ago. He's had over 100. So this road has been long for us and at times lonely, which prompted us to start a grassroots effort to connect with other military and veteran caregivers and then channel that into a movement that was very supported by President Trump during his campaign. Mm-hmm. And here we are. You know, we do believe that everyone who's worn the nation's uniform deserves to come home in a way that is not fraught with red tape. And we fought really hard for that. So we're proud and excited of this next step in this venture.
Well, it sounds like a great thing. Now, you're not just a veteran service organization. This is something that's a little bit different.
That's right. We're not a veteran service organization. Mm-hmm. We are a 501c19, which means that we're going to use education and advocacy to talk to our representatives, support the bills that call for real VA accountability and reform. You know, these are guys who, and girls, of course, who know how to mobilize, know how to complete a mission, and that's what we're going to do. You know, our mission is VA reform, and so we're going to mobilize the troops. This is our war on the home front, and we're going to conquer it.
Okay, so you're going to go out and try and change something that's been in existence for about 70 years.
You make that sound very tough.
It is tough. Well, we know, there are so many people out there that, you know, we've heard some, and I don't want to just, you know, attack the VA because they've done amazing things.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just sometimes it just takes you a while to get into the system. And once you're into the system, you have to know the right way to go. There's no real thorough roadmap, you know, to get your benefits or to get, you know, what your coverage is or to get to see the right doctor and so on and so forth. And obviously with Mike starting off at Walter Reed, that's kind of the top of the mountain for, you know, for medical centers in the country. But then you go home and, you know, things kind of get lost in a lot of red tape, doesn't it?
It did. And so, you know, he was at Walter Reed and he's also very badly burned. And so he ended up at BAMC in San Antonio, Texas, mm-hmm. where the CSI is. They're fabulous. And we were ready and excited to come home. And so came home from Texas back to Rhode Island, our home state. And I had been focused on the next step for so long. You know, we were in life or death mode for so, so long. And I remember his doctor taking my hands one time when I was really frustrated in San Antonio. And she said to me, Sarah, the hard part needs to happen now. He needs to learn to survive surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that was true. There were a lot of times and many dark months where, you know, one of the things Mike told someone working on him when he was wounded was he said, don't save me. And that haunted me for a very long time. But I think coming home with these injuries was a tragedy in and of itself. He didn't know what life would look like. But we were so focused on coming home and so excited to complete that next step. And then we got home and I realized, what in the world do we do now? And really that just meant a lot of waiting.
Yeah, right. Well, how did they prepare you for his coming home?
You know, they really didn't. And so I remember watching a YouTube video in my kitchen, how to change some of these bandages. Because, you know, here we are, April will be 7 years, and he still has open wounds. And so I remember looking at these YouTube videos and trying to figure out how to change the bandages and realize that, okay, he has fought his fight. He fought the good fight, and he continues to every day. But it's my turn now. And, you know, I needed to, basically my fight would be on the home front, and my enemy, and I hate to call it that, but especially in our early days, it was the VA
mm-hmm.
and access to care. And so, you know, we went through, we had a lot of difficult times. I've told you that one time we waited 57 days for someone to sign a piece of paper so that we could have his prosthetic limb repair. We had no backup.
Obviously that's unacceptable. We know that.
Right.
And the idea of anything like those things where you're trying to get stuff fixed, you know, that's all you do. I mean, it's like you said at the beginning of the interview is that, you know, they send us overseas to fight their wars. And then it's sort of like, would you guys just kind of, just kind of go away somewhere and we'll take care of you when we get to it.
My husband loves the Army. I love the Army. I think that in the United States, we have the best fighting force in the world. So you'll never hear me say a bad word about the Army. But the VA is fair game, and that's a different
story. I wasn't talking about the Army. I mean,
military medical care was actually wonderful. It was when we came home that the challenges really began, was trying to obtain care from the VA, waiting our turn, essentially. That was really difficult to go from this environment that had these surgeons who were so equipped and doctors to deal with these battlefield issues, and then to go, you know, one of my first experiences at the VA, we ended up in a VA emergency room. Now, my husband's a 2-time Purple Heart recipient. If you look at him, I mean, I think that most people can look at him and see that these are battle injuries.
Mm-hmm.
We were in the VA emergency room, and the doctor kept saying to me, is he an amputee from diabetes? And I said, please, please just read his chart.
Yeah, that would be good, yes.
Right.
I can hear the frustration in your voice, and I can feel it welling up in me again, as usual. The problem with the VA, obviously, is the care that you normally get in the VA is excellent in most cases.
Right.
It's just getting to that care. I mean, we're very fortunate here at our VA here in Ann Arbor. We're right across the street from the University of Michigan Medical Center, and they kind of go back and forth and help each other out. And I know that there are many VAs that are like that, but some of them are, you know, a little bit further out.
And well, we're in Salisbury, North Carolina, so, you know, not certainly not a big city, but I will say the doctors are fabulous. I mean, they're wonderful and extremely dedicated, but it's just obtaining the care that the challenge remains.
Well, what do you think is the problem in getting in? Is it lack of staff, or is it just overwhelmed, or what do you think that their problem is, the VA's problem?
Every provider I've had at the VA, with the exception of that emergency room doctor, has really been wonderful and had a very firm grasp on Mike's medical case, which is a polytrauma case, of course.
Sure.
I think the administrative side of things, it's a system that is so archaic. And these young men and women are surviving these life-altering battle injuries that even 5 years earlier would have killed them.
Oh, right,
and
absolutely,
so,
yes.
You know, so grateful for battlefield medicine, but we need to catch up with it here at home. So, you know, we need to have a system. It needs to be a system working as a system that ensures when we have a young guy like Mike, who was 25 when he was wounded, that we have someone looking at his prosthetic needs, his burn needs, his infectious disease needs. And really what I have found is there is not that. So I think there needs to be an administrative major overhaul. And, of course, the ability, and there are bad apples anywhere.
Sure.
But the ability to fire poorly performing and incompetent employees. And I got a call in January. We were having a ramp put in our house by the VA. And this man, you know, part of me would say bless him because I don't think he knew who he was getting, but when he called me, he said, I need you to bring your husband in. We need to verify, and I quote, that he still has his combat injuries. And I said, okay, do you have his chart in front of you? And he said, yes, ma'am. I said, so you see that his arm and leg were blown off? And he said, yes, ma'am. And I said, so you need me to bring him in to show that they haven't grown back? And he said, well, you know, it's part of the process.
That's weird. I hadn't heard anything like that one.
Yes.
Mackerel.
Yes.
All right. So
those are the processes that need to be modernized.
Oh, absolutely right. I agree. I have a good friend here locally who's just had all kinds of bad things happen to him as a result of his exposure to Agent Orange and malaria and so on and so forth. And he's kind of going through the process of getting a ramp built, and then they're. And I guess we should talk about some of these things that are available, even though it seems to take months to get them, or years in many cases, is that if you are, is Mike considered 100% disabled, I would think?
Oh, of course. Mike's, you know, one of the most severely wounded surviving service members from Iraq and Afghanistan. But even for those who may not be, there are some great shortcuts. And as you said, there are great resources available once you know how to tap those resources. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I strongly advocate for, and we're so lucky in North Carolina, we have Senator Tillis and Senator Burr and Congressman Pittenger, but what we're so lucky about is talk to your elected officials because they have people on staff who can help you navigate the maze, you know, work through wait time issues, especially if you have something that's critically needed like a ramp. So I'm a huge proponent of talking to your officials, letting them know your story and letting them help. You know, that's why they're there.
Right. Yeah, we have an example of that here locally with our congresswoman, who a friend of mine was trying to get. She was supposed to have surgery, a brain surgery, and they put it off for 6 weeks. And he called up our local congresswoman, and he got in 3 days later. He's in there getting his surgery. So it certainly works.
Absolutely.
And I do encourage all you men and women out there, and it doesn't make any difference how old you are. If you're having difficulty with the VA, the one way to get their attention is to go through your congressperson, for sure. I think so. All right, so Square Deal for Veterans, or for vets. Was it just you and Mike, or are there other people that got involved in this?
No, it's a great group of people. If you visit squaredealforvets.org, you can read the bios of these heroes, and really that's what they are. They have, you know, combined many, many years and decades of combat experience, many deployments between all of them, and true leadership both on the battlefield and off. And I think that they're going to be great voices for our nation's veterans, you know, all eras. And that's what we're here for. This is not just a post 9/11 group. We want to ensure that everyone, regardless of age, regardless of what your service looks like, that everyone who ever put the uniform on gets the square deal that they deserve.
Well, I certainly agree with you. And I wanted to talk about some of the other things that are available. Can you just kind of name some of the other opportunities that the VA does provide?
Sure. I mean, the caregiver program is a great program.
Caregiver. That was one of them. Yes. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, right now, the financial stipend piece is only open to post 9/11, but the caregiver program is open to all eras of caregivers, and it ensures that you have some communication tools and resources and, of course, the designation that you are the veteran's caregiver. That way, when you call on behalf of your care recipient, you know, you're noted in the file as being the caregiver. It's a great program. There are peer mentorship availabilities through that for people who have been in your shoes and can offer advice and friendship.
Mm-hmm. We have an organization here locally that's called Warriors and Caregivers, and it sounds similar to some of the things that you are doing, and it just got started up. And in our local organization, it's mostly Vietnam veterans that are acting as mentors for the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans when they come home and try to help them navigate the system, just like you are doing. I know that this is a national, or your attempt, it's going to become a national organization, hopefully as a result of this radio program, right? But what would you suggest? How do people get a hold of you? Let's put it that way.
Visit squaredealforvets.org. There's certainly a contact piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been lucky that since the momentum of the campaign, we were able to, during the campaign, work with now President Trump's people on crafting what real, true VA reform would look like. And we're so proud that we had a hand in that platform. And also, you know, we were invited to speak at CPAC a couple of weeks ago, which was a great way to kind of start this launch. So we're excited. We're working with members of the House and Senate from all over the country who also really want to be champions for our nation's wounded, their caregivers, and their families.
Well, I want to congratulate you on what you have done, Sarah. We were talking with Sarah Verado, who is one of the founders of Square Deal for Vets. And this is an organization that I think we can all certainly support and get involved with. And I had one quick question. We got about 2 minutes to go as my director or producer is flashing me over there. 3 minutes to go. What do you think that President Trump is going to try and do? I mean, everything gets so distracted in the news that you really, unfortunately, you can't figure out really what direction that some of the things that he wants to accomplish.
Well, in the simplest terms, he's going to put the veteran back in charge of their health care. He's going to empower the veteran and their caregivers. And President Trump understands how instrumental the caregivers are in this process. So he'll be empowering both. He'll be empowering the veteran family. Certainly choice for care is huge and something that I think everyone can get behind. You know, you need to see a doctor, then you see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going through systems are important, but the breakdowns, there's no room for breakdowns when it comes to these serious medical situations. So I think, you know, providing that the choice, the support, and the empowerment is what he's already made great strides in doing, especially with the appointment of Dr. Shulkin.
Well, I certainly wish him good luck, and I wish you good luck, too. And please keep us informed as to what's going on. We'd be happy to spread the word as much as we possibly can. The organization is Square Deal for Vets, and you heard about them right here on Veterans Radio. And so I want to make sure that they contact you. You can go to
I thank you, and thank you sincerely for your service, your sacrifice, and what you're doing for fellow veterans. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And we'll be talking to you soon. And say hi to Mike. And it's, are these your two little kids that I'm looking at on the website?
Yep, we have a 2.5-year-old, a 1-year-old, and we have baby girl number 3 coming in July. So we stay busy.
Holy mackerel. Well, congratulations on the July, and best of luck to you and Mike, and I wish you the best. Thank you.
Thank you
for what
Bye-bye.
You're doing. Thank him for your service, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Square Deal for Vets, great new organization out there, and I think it's really important, and I want to just kind of repeat the line at the top of their website, is that a man who is good enough to shed his blood for his country is good enough to be given a square deal afterwards. And that's President Theodore Roosevelt. And I wanted to mention one other thing that we try to do here on Veterans Radio. If you've ever gotten an email from me, you can see that we always sign off with our own little saying from George Washington. And George Washington says, the willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars were treated and appreciated by our nation. And that's George Washington. So we got George Washington, we got Theodore Roosevelt. Get on the stick, you guys in Washington, and take care of this situation. When we come back, we're going to be talking about near-death experiences. I'm excited. We'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back. And we're back on Veterans Radio, and welcome to the second half of the program. We're coming to you from the studios of WAAM in beautiful downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, you can give us a call during our interviews. The number here is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-838-1600. And joining me on the program right now, it's kind of an unusual topic for us on our program, but I found it really fascinating when I was contacted about this idea. And joining us, as I said, is the President Emerita Diane Corcoran of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. And Diane is a retired Army colonel-type person. And so I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
All right. So this, I was thinking about, you know, the interview that we're going to have today as I was talking with Sarah about her husband. And I'm sure that there are many examples of these men and women who have been blown apart and no reason to think that they would ever survive. And yet they come out of, a coma at some point. And I'm just thinking about how many people do you have these near-death experiences, and I guess we should probably define them first. How do you define a near-death experience?
Well, a near-death experience is a profound phenomena that typically occurs when a person is either clinically compromised, facing death, under extreme physical trauma, like an accident, like drowning, like... Mm-hmm. And then they go through a series of characteristics that are universal around the world. And they might, there are about 15 in total, but they might have one or two or 10.
How did you get involved? How did you get involved and interested in this phenomenon?
Many, many years ago, in 1969, I was a nurse in Vietnam. And a young man called me over in the middle of the night, and he had been a traumatic amputee that day. He was shot. And he said, I've got to tell you something, but you've got to promise me you'll believe me. Mm. And I said, well, tell me what happened. And he goes on to say, when he was shot, he felt like he came out of his physical body and went up, and he could see all the spirits around him and went through this kind of hollowness to another place. And he described what we now know as kind of a typical NDE, and then eventually had come back to his body. And he was so afraid. I mean, it was one thing to be so emotional, but it was another thing. He was petrified that nobody would believe him.
Sure. Wow.
And this is prior. Raymond Moody didn't write his book till the mid-70s. So I really had no idea what had happened to him. But I could see how profoundly emotional and real it was for him. And I just was supportive and told him I believed him and I thought he'd had this exceptional experience and, you know, to find the gifts from it. I didn't realize that that was the beginning of my passion and path on NDEs for veterans.
Well, I know you've got a special program, which we'll get to it in just a moment. For all of our Vietnam veterans that are listening to the program, and as am I, where were you stationed in Vietnam?
I was stationed in Long Binh.
Oh, which one?
The neurosurgical center, the 24th of VAC.
24th of VAC, okay. I was stationed in Long Binh also. I was in the Plantation Airfield and dropped a few people off at the 24th of VAC myself.
I'm sure.
And but that just adds to your credibility right there. See, so we have to bring that in for you. So after you when did you continue studying this, or was this something that
really, I went home in 70, and then in the early 70s, I started thinking about this, and I was just so mesmerized by the intensity of this thing, except there wasn't anything written about it. And so it wasn't till the mid-70s that Raymond Moody wrote his book, Life After Life. And when I read that, I said, this is what this young man was talking about. And at that moment, it was like I'd always thought every nurse and doctor, corpsman, should know what this is so they can be supportive to these people. This is a life-changing, what I know now to be true, a life-changing experience.
Sure, I would think so.
And so from the time in the mid-70s, IANS was just getting formed. A bunch of doctors got together because they wanted to research this phenomenon. And I joined them as a member of their association, have been a member ever since. Now I was just president for 8 years, and then previously I was president for 4 years and have been on and off the board the whole time. But, you know, very interested in veterans and children because they don't have a great deal of advocacy and people that listen to them. But over the years, I had veterans find me and say, you know, one was an old brown shoe, as we used to call him, sergeant, and he was stationed at Fort Knox, and he saw my picture in some magazine, and I had my, you know, military uniform on, but I was talking about near-death experiences. And he called me up. He said, I have got to talk to you. I had one of those things, and I really need to talk to you about it. And like 3 weeks later, I was in Denver, and he was in Fort Knox. And he walked through my office and said, I'm here to talk about this because it is extremely emotional. And some of the after effects of having had this experience, they are certainly life-changing, and this is a very different person coming out of this experience, and, of course, it takes time to integrate these changes.
So what was his experience?
He had an aortic aneurysm, which you're lucky if you're sitting on the OR table to survive that,
right.
And he did. And, you know, kind of typically went outside of his physical body. They had him on a pump, and he was bleeding a lot. And during this surgery, his soul spirit, whatever one's comfortable with, rose up out of his physical body, and he could see and hear everything the surgeons, everybody was saying, and it sounded like he might not make it. And then he looked around and he just said, I just went right up through the ceiling in this tunnel-like toward this bright light.
Oh, it's the light.
And he said, I was bathed by this light. And it's something that many, many experiencers tell you about, that this light is so wonderful. It's really bright but not noxious, and it feels like being surrounded in unconditional love. And just the most bizarre feelings for a lot of different people who have certainly never known that kind of love. But even for mothers who have kids at home, and that's a story of an orthopedic surgeon who almost died, and she said, even though I knew I had four children at home, I couldn't resist the light. I just wanted to stay in it. It was so loving and beautiful, and I knew this was a place I would be happy. And, of course, not our decision. Some people talk about trying to walk through the light, and the next thing they know, they're back in their body and being resuscitated. And so whatever happens, not our decision, apparently.
This is fascinating to me. We're talking with Diane Corcoran, who is past president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. She's also an Army nurse veteran from the Vietnam era. And we're talking about these near-death experiences that people have. And I know that you mentioned earlier that they're kind of similar in many ways. It seems like most of them are these out-of-body experiences where you can see what's going on around you.
Right. And you know, they go on to this other place. They might see beautiful flowers, colors we don't have here, hear music. I think for the most, when I was first learning about this, the most convincing thing for me was with children who have this experience, and they go to what they'll say, I died, I went to heaven. And they will describe these beings, and sometimes they will talk about meeting a loved one who is a relative of theirs who they've never seen, the family doesn't know anything about, and they come back with information that they can tell their parents and say, I saw my great-great-grandfather, he died in a fire in England, and, you know, give details, and of course the parents can look it up, and in fact, it did happen. And children, of course, don't have much of anybody to talk to except their parents. So if their parents aren't supportive, it's a difficult, lonely life for them to try to grow up with all these feelings and experiences. Similarly to our veterans, recently a Dr. Hufford did a study. And it was very reassuring to me because I have always said I believed combat veterans were the most overlooked population because I thought it would be about 50% of them have NDEs. And, of course, they have physical trauma, psychological trauma, emotional trauma, and then they have this strange experience. Dr. Hufford found that it was actually 48%, so very close to 50%, and that is a lot of veterans.
50% of us? 50% of us have had these experiences?
People who were injured in combat, yes.
Diane, this is fascinating. I have to take a real quick break here, so hang on the line. We're going to be coming back, and we're talking with Diane Corcoran about near-death experiences, and I've got a couple of people who have talked to me about this that I want to talk to you about and see what we can do. And then we'll find out what you're trying to do. I know you're trying to help out some veterans across the country, and we're going to do that. So we'll be right back in just a moment. You're listening to Veterans Radio. right. We are back on Veterans Radio, and we are talking with Diane Corcoran, who is the former president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies and a former nurse in Vietnam, who got interested in this whole topic from somebody that she was helping out that was wounded in Vietnam. One of the guys that I've talked to, Diane, was wounded three times. They thought he was dead. They even put him in a body bag, zipped him up in the body bag, threw him on a pile of other people. And whatever occurred, he made a noise, and they heard him, and they got him out. And he said that he had left. And he sort of described what you were talking about, is that he had left his body, kind of went up, like he said. It was like I was in my own personal helicopter, and I could see the battle going on below me. And he said, then I woke up when they zipped open the bag. But is that normal?
Well, being thrown in a body bag and being zipped up, I wouldn't say is normal.
No, I wouldn't think so, but
it has happened. I've seen patients who we thought were dead sort of resurrect themselves and come back to life. So I think anything is possible. That's, of course, an extreme case of this. And there is another book written by a Russian scientist who had the experience of being run over by the KGB, and he laid in the morgue for 3 days.
Oh, my.
And was having these out-of-body experiences and going to where his family was and watching them grieve and, you know, traveling all around. There are no limitations when you're free of your physical body. And then on Monday, he was taken to start an autopsy, and he moved.
Oh.
And, of course, and it was such that actually the person doing the autopsy was some distant cousin or somebody that knew him. And naturally, then they tried to resuscitate him, and he lived and ended up living in Houston for a while and had a significant time period of near-death experiences that he writes about in his book. And for the life of me, right this minute, I think it's only published in Russian. But he was an incredible man. And he insists he was run over by the KGB because of his association with American scientists. Mm. So, there are many, many incredible stories. And the outreach, unfortunately, to veterans has been very difficult. We have some Vietnam vets who have written books, Vanderbush by, I'm trying to think, Home Before Morning, no, that, I'm not sure that's it. I'll have to think about it for a minute. But the Iraqi and Afghanistan vets, mm-hmm. It's hard to get them to talk about this. And I know that so many of them are afraid because they feel like the doctors will think they're crazy. Mm-hmm. They feel like there's a possibility they could lose their benefits. They have no idea what's going on and really don't recognize the after effects as they're coming forward. And unfortunately, at the VA, they mostly don't have a clue. And they misdiagnose them because somebody comes in, and you can understand how this might happen. Somebody said, I died. I went to heaven. I saw God. And this mm-hmm. happened. And this happened. I saw my dead grandmother. And they'll say, oh, he's having a psychiatric
brain. Yeah, send him up to the seventh floor.
Yeah, bipolar. And then they put him on these horrible medications.
Well,
or they throw him in a PTSD group thinking that'll help. And mm-hmm. meds or therapy or being in a group for something else don't help. They need somebody to let them own their own experience, talk about their experience. And a perfect example is a couple of years ago, I went to my Vietnam reunion. We had patients, doctors, and nurses there. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting talking to a patient who was actually brought into our hospital years before I was, not many, but a couple of years before I was stationed there. And he had been shot in the back of the head, literally took the back of his head out. Oof. And had some vascular injuries. And he said, yes, and I was brought into the hospital, and I kind of was in and out of consciousness. And one time I woke up, and I was talking to this friend of mine, and then he sort of got this strange look in his eyes, and he said, well, I'm just remembering that friend of mine actually had died 10 years before this happened to me. And then he's telling me about how the medics got him, and they were holding his neck and taking him to surgery. And he very specifically remembered this medic who was in a white uniform with green rank on it, and I can't remember his name right now. And I said, well, Michael, we didn't have medics wearing white in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And the more he talked to me, then he explained, and he had this really detailed NDE, which is what we call near-death experiences, and nobody wanted to hear about it. After he recuperated and he was in a study at Walter Reed, he tried to talk to the doctors. They didn't want to hear about it because they don't know anything about it. God knows, I hope that it's different today. When I started doing this, there weren't any books written. There really wasn't a lot of information out there. Now there are thousands of books written. We have all kinds of physicians, actually, who have had NDEs. But we're still having a difficult time with veterans, getting them to participate, getting them information. We have a lot of information. We have groups all over the country they could join. But trying to find a way into the VA to give them information or vet center, it's been very difficult.
Well, I know that you're we've got about 5 minutes to go, Diane, that you are attempting to raise some funds to do a video on this to get the word out, and you know, and how can we help veterans, especially who have gone through one of these near death experiences? How do we go about helping you out, and what is it that you want to do with this video?
I'm going to make a video. We've already done a lot of taping of veterans, and we're trying to tell people why it's important, doctors and nurses, why they need to recognize this, and for veterans, why they need to come forward. And we're making this video. Then my plan is to take it to numerous VAs and hospitals to show it to the chaplains, doctors, and nurses, so they can see why this is so important and talk about it and become informed so they can help veterans. Right now, they're not very good at identifying them or helping them. We ask all veterans if they're interested to call, and I'm happy to talk to them, and I get several, especially after calls on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
People can donate money to IANDS, capital IANDS, and the address, do you have it there? Or do
they can go to the website. It's IANDS.org, and then click on the
donation.
Donate
and
to
what
the
you want to write
video.
On it is Veterans Video.
Right.
And just say that's you want your money to go to the Veterans Video.
And
we hope to have, if we can raise the money, this done by August, so at our annual conference, we can show that. I have been inviting disabled veterans to the conference on a scholarship, and we've been having roundtable discussions, and we hope to show the film this year, which was really fascinating and wonderful and healing, because the first time many of them have ever had a chance to talk about their experience.
Well, I think it's another example of where you find out that you're not alone.
Absolutely. It's like coming home.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, the one who told me about his experience in our Vietnam group, he walked out of there with about 20 books, and he said, this has changed my life. I feel like I'm home. I feel like I have a family now, because there's, 300 people, doctors, mm-hmm. nurses, and experiencers, all there to love you and support you and help you in any way they can.
Well, I want to thank you very much for getting involved in this project, Diane, and I hope that it works out well for you. Please keep us informed as to what's going on. When is your conference, and where is it going to be this year?
Our conference is 3 through 6 August in Denver, Colorado, or at Westminster. And we would welcome people to come to that. It really does change their mind. You can go to our website, and we have a conference website. And pretty soon registration will be up, but you also can call the office and get the information you need from the website.
Okay. We will do that. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and I hope I can get you to come back again. There's a lot of stories I'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. I'd love to do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. I suggest that you go to IANDS.org, and there's all kinds of information. If you've had a near-death experience or you know somebody that's had one, I think it would be very helpful for them to go and look at the trailer just for their fundraiser, too. It's really kind of very neat. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's program. We're going to be back next week. Of course, we have a live show. With anybody out there who has a story you'd like us to cover on Veterans Radio, please contact us. We'd love to talk to you about your story. That's our goal here at Veterans Radio, the voice of America's veterans. So until next week, you are dismissed.